got a difficult topic here today. We say that probably pretty frequently around here. June is Men's Mental Health Awareness Month, right? And why are we focusing on men's mental health? Well, that's a simple question that a guy like me would ask. Oh, no, I'm just fine. But if you dig in and if you peer into some things, you recognize, well, you know, I'm kind of feeling down about this and this is affecting me here. It's tough to understand the impact of mental challenges on your day-to-day life, but it's important to do that. And we're going to try to do that here today as much as we can. We've got some experiences to share here. Steve Ariscow, our friend, guest host, he is part of this Leaders Speak First initiative, kind of created that as well. And he did that at a TED Talk in Billings here regarding mental health. That'll open up some things for us here. And with that, John Summers Flanagan from the University of Montana, he's a counseling professor and a clinical psychologist. We'll get that perspective and we'll try to understand the challenges, the whys, and the way forward when it comes to good mental health today for men on Voices of Montana.
Now here's your host, Mr. Tom Schultz.
Thank you very much, Cody.
I almost said your guest host, Steve Ariscow.
I know. Let's welcome Steve. Steve, how are you?
I'm great this morning. It's kind of weird to be here with the two of you and you're ordering pizza first thing in the morning. I don't understand that. Yeah.
I found that kind of funny. Cody welcomes our guests sometimes with, you know, these sort of, what do you want on your pizza today? And John said pepperoni. John Summers Flanagan is with us here. Let's introduce John as well, and then we'll get into this topic more. Good morning, John. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I am doing great, and I really mean that, and I'm honored to be a part of this show. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on. I appreciate that. There's a couple of things we want to get to. We'll define the problem. We'll talk about some of these challenges, and we'll look for a way forward, too, for a lot of people. But we're going to start off with Steve Ariscow and Leaders Speak First. And I think this is important, Steve. Steve did a TEDx talk in Billings regarding this. And Steve, a former recently retired Big Sky Economic Development Director, you would think he's up there with slides and financial information and business ideas. No, he picked a topic that most men are running from, and that is, how do I feel deep inside?
Ah, wow. Yeah, I did a TEDx talk that I called Leaders Speak First. And let me give just quickly, I'll say that I have had a personal experience battling with anxiety and depression. And there were some times in my life that was very acute. And I had to seek help and work through. And so I call myself on this. I'm on a journey of healing and self-awareness. And yeah, just because it's an ongoing process, but not a lot of people knew that story about me. But I felt compelled to tell it. But I have to kind of give a little background before the TEDx talk. Big Sky Economic Development used to do this Business of Healthcare Summit. And we had invited as one of our key speaker, Dr. Eric Arzubi. I think your audience is probably familiar with Eric, and he'll probably be on at some show down the road. We're going to talk to him more about that. But we had him speak to a group of 300 business leaders about mental health challenges in the workplace. And it was eye-opening. Almost a third of your workforce is being impacted in some way with a mental health challenge. You may not even recognize it as an employer. And he talked to us about the reality of what that looks like, the cost in productivity loss, the impact on a local economy or a national economy. It was very eye-opening. But he also talked about the reason we don't deal with it at the workplace is because it still has this stigma around it. We can't even have a thoughtful conversation about it. And that kind of stuck with me. And I'm sitting in that room knowing I've had my own personal journey with anxiety and depression and the impact that had and the growth that had on me, the impact on others in my life. And I haven't said a word to anybody about that. Now, I knew I wanted to someday do a TED Talk, because if you're cool, you do a TED Talk, right? But I didn't think it was going to be on that topic. Mm-hmm. Well, the stars aligned, and I thought, no, if I'm going to share, because it's important to share, I'm going to tell my personal story. And the premise behind that story, which I can get into parts and pieces of that, but the whole leaders speak first is to say, when we're dealing with difficult topics, the leader in the room is the first one to go. When it's really difficult, we're the first one to speak up because we have to set the stage and the tone and tell the rest of the group it's okay to add your voice to this conversation on this topic. And that's especially true in mental health. That's how I came up with the theme of leaders speak first. But I can tell you, doing a TEDx talk is not easy. It's a lot of work. I was sharing with you guys before we went on there, about 4 days before the talk, this was October of 2023, I was sitting in a meeting and I led meetings. I mean, my whole career has been meetings and being the leader and the point person and having all the solutions, all that stuff. And I'm sitting in that meeting and all of a sudden the room starts to spin. Now, this is 4 days before I have to get on stage and share my TEDx talk. And I had to excuse myself from the room. I said, I don't know what's going on, but I'm going to step out of the room. Somebody else take over. That people followed me out thinking and I had to go. I had my heart tested and they wanted to make sure I wasn't having a stroke, all that sort of thing. Luckily, my wife is a nurse. So in my household, if you have any sort of symptom whatsoever, you're going to go get checked. And so I got checked. I had another dizzy spell like 2 days before. I told my wife, I think it's just that anxiety piece playing in me. I'm going to still give my TED talk. So the day of when I stepped on stage, I'm standing there and before the first words come out of my mouth, I don't know if you can notice it on the video, if you wanted to watch the video, the room starts to spin and I'm standing on stage and in my head, I'm going, Steve, you're going to either get a standing ovation because of your talk or because you are going to fall flat on your face. But regardless of what it is, you're going to keep going. And my wife was sitting in the audience and she told me later, said, I saw you start to pivot from foot to foot. And in her mind, she was going, he's going down. He isn't going to get. And the words came out of my mouth and I was able to share a very personal, difficult story about anxiety and depression. But as a leader, I wanted to set an example. And that was the premise behind doing that TED talk.
And thank you, Steve, for that. And I do encourage people, just do a little web search on it. You'll find it. TEDx Talk, Billings, Montana, Steve Arviscal. You'll have to look up how to spell that. I've learned now over the years. John, I want to have you, let's start with that, right? The leaders speak first. And then that personal experience. For a guy like Steve, who seems to have a lot of things together, breaking out and being honest with the audience about something like that, we can talk all day about the challenges and the stigmas and the solutions. But unless you have that experience, that experiential demonstration out there, I don't think you have the power behind it. Talk about what it does for a community, whether it's a large community or even a smaller community, when you see leaders speak out first in this circumstance.
Yeah, so I saw the beginning of that TED Talk, and Steve, you can see that you're feeling emotion, and there are really two things I want to say about that. One is, you know, as men in particular, we are taught to follow this sort of narrow pathway, to have a narrow range of emotions and interests. And if we deviate from that, we kind of tip ourselves into feeling like we're doing something wrong or bad or we're a failure.
Yep.
And so when I saw the beginning of that talk and I saw the deep emotion that you were about to share, for me, it's like, yes, we need leaders, male leaders, to show a wider range of emotion is acceptable. So I was really impressed, and I think especially because we are so well socialized in keeping our emotions pretty tightly wrapped. Now, on the other hand, I want to say, you know, there should be no stigma, right, for having deep and painful emotions. And sometimes, and I've worked as a clinical psychologist and a counselor educator for a long time. And sometimes there's this expectation, well, men should talk more and talk more openly about their emotions. And I feel like then sometimes men feel like there's a stigma around not talking about their emotions or not talking about their emotions directly, and that they'll be judged for that. And so that puts us into a smaller box, right? So, you know, if you're not comfortable with it, then you're doing something wrong. And if you're comfortable with it, you're doing something wrong. And so I'd say let's be accepting of both and.
That's a very good point, John. I know for me, as I was preparing my talk and having to put on paper this story, I went to a colleague that I trusted and I asked them, you know, I have this reputation and I'm the guy in the suit and the tie and the white shirt who's leading things. And so the community views me a certain way. Should I share this story? Will people look at me different? Will it hurt my reputation? And the person who I really appreciate, she just looked at me and she said, that's bullcrap, Steve. You're just trying to, maybe I shouldn't have said that on
No,
air.
That's okay.
This is Ag Network, so bull, that's okay. Anyway, she said, no, that's the point of your message is that you have to speak up. And so I said, okay, great, I'm going for it. Whether it hurts, and you'll see in my talk, I talk a little bit about that, is like, okay, this, I'm being vulnerable. It may hurt how people perceive me. And I think that's what keeps people quiet, because they're worried about what others will think. And that's, then we put ourselves in a box and we don't get the help we need.
How much healing was in that process? Just that, preparing for this and then having it done and looking back on it. How much healing was accomplished in that, Steve?
I think I'm smiling because I think my whole family, my wife and others, were so glad it was done because they watched the kind of the process of me going through it, getting prepared, and they had lived the experience with me. They, I think, felt really good that I had gotten it out, and they know that it was helpful to me. I think it was good that I got my story out about anxiety and depression and how I managed through that. And I didn't manage through it by myself. That's a, if we can say nothing else today, you don't do this. It's not a solo performance. As a man, there are times we've got to reach out for help. But getting it out there and then having people come back around with that same day or later and just say, absolutely, thank you. I've shared your message. It was impactful to another person. That made that feel good.
We're up against a break, and John Summers Flanagan, I'm going to have you come back after the break and peel into that a little bit in terms of, now, Steve was in a unique position, right, and able to use this opportunity to move himself forward. But not every man is going to be able to stand up in front of a crowd like that and speak to this. So I wanted to ask you about how every man, so to speak, can come to that rational realization that, hey, I may need some help with this, and then we'll talk about where we turn. We talk about mental health probably more so than a lot of shows out there, too, because it invades the challenges. It invades our lives in so many ways. And often, you know, we're talking about kids' mental health or mental health in general, and the suicide rate in Montana, and I refer to it as a gut punch. It is a gut punch, especially when we talk about our kids and how many of them have thought about suicide. There's a list of stats, and I've got them here, and every one of these stats is a gut punch in a way. And we can throw it out there, and it can help exemplify the issue. But I think if we're open and honest about men's mental health, as we welcome you back here, I think we have an understanding just about what we're avoiding, what we need, but yet getting over the hump of reaching out and getting there. That's part of the challenge. We're talking about challenges and opportunities today regarding men's mental health. Steve Arviskow is in studio. Leaders speak first. And, you know, Steve, that just speaks for itself. You know, I think if you say that, there's an organization out there, and I know that's it's not like all fully formed here, but I love the sentiment there about how speaking out is the beginning of resolution. Absolutely. To yep. A lot of things. Yep. Yeah. John Summers Flanagan is with us here, and John, I'm so glad to get to know you. I've heard and read your stuff over a lot of years here, and I know that you and Courtney Kibblewhite, our vice president, have worked together on a number of projects as well. You've got a website. I'm going to point to it. There's a lot of blogs and a lot of good information, and a focus there too on men's mental health and boys' mental health too. So area of expertise. It's johnsummersflanagan.com. And Summers is S-O-M-M-E-R-S, and Flanagan, common spelling, as is John. JohnSummersFlanagan.com. So with all of that, now let's get into this, John. From that perspective of it, you're not everybody's going to have that epiphany moment. Not that it was Steve, but
right.
that moment where they're forced or they're encouraged to address these things. How does it happen in pretty much everybody's everyday life?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And Steve did a wonderful job of being a leader who goes first, but not all of us get to do a TEDx talk. In fact, I tried out for a TEDx talk, Steve, and I got rejected. And so I want you to know that I'm jealous.
I wouldn't recommend talking about your mental health journey at a TEDx talk as the first time you talk about your mental. That was dark.
Duly noted.
Yeah.
That is more good advice. None of us is fine all the time, right? We are just not fine all the time. We have ups and downs. Everyone has downs. And there will become a point when sometimes we think, well, we just got to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, and that can be absolutely fine. But there are other times when we need to talk with someone else. And I used to do this joke when I did couples counseling, when I would tell the couple that I want you to talk about your sex life loudly and in public. And they would look at me like I'm crazy. And I'd say, okay, well, how about quietly at home? Because you should talk about it. And so the same kind of thing is true about our mental health. We don't have to go onto a stage like Steve did, which is a wonderful role modeling thing that he did. We can do it quietly and in the ways that we're able to. As someone who has trained counselors and trained counselors along with a lot of women who are offering the training, sometimes there's this stereotype that counseling always has to be about getting into your deep emotions. And yes, that can be a part of counseling, but that's not the only kind of counseling that there is. And so you can just talk with a friend or a pastor or your romantic partner, your wife, and those things can be incredibly productive. And you can do problem solving and planning for how to cope with. You can enhance or increase your exercise like Steve did with his bike. So there are many different pathways, and I wouldn't want to shut any of those down, but recognizing I'm not really okay, and then finding someone you trust to share that with, that's a really important first step to making some positive changes.
So, John, the way you described that was so good. On a personal level, finding the tools that are timely and work for you, but being willing to reach out for them. That's an important leader, and I'm going to lead in this space for my well-being and the well-being of my family. The second piece, and really the notion behind Leaders Speak First, was us corporately as leaders, and I had spent my career talking in rooms full of business leaders. And then when this issue was prompted in my thinking, it was, hey, as a business community, as leaders, we need to be aware of what's going on in the lives of our team members, of our colleagues. We should be open and honest as leaders to talk about this, and let's, as leaders, start that conversation.
Yeah, what a fabulous message.
Leaders, John, I'm going to add to that. Leaders take on burdens, though, and they do it on a regular basis. So, what are some of those tools that tell us this is not my burden to bear? How do we get disciplined in some of those areas? And again, this is kind of like you mentioned, Steve. What are some of those little tools that I can, pack every day
Yes.
that are going to get through all of this?
Yeah, there are all kinds of tools. I'm going to just share one tool right now, because we talked about this on the break, and it's a tool that is both an evidence-based treatment for insomnia as well as an evidence-based treatment for depression. Now, the reasons why it's evidence-based, I mean, it's really pretty good research support, and it's so amazingly simple, okay? So I just want to ask anyone who's listening, have you ever had difficulty sleeping? There are three kinds of insomnia. The first one is difficulty falling asleep. That's when you lay in bed and think for longer than you wish before you can go to sleep. The second one's called early morning awakening. That's when you wake up at 4 a.m. and you wanted to sleep until 6, but you woke up at 4 and you know it's over. And then usually your mind is percolating from 4 to 6. And then there's intermittent insomnia. That's when you wake up off and on. So now almost all of us have one form of that or another. And so this tool is called Three Good Things. And what it does, and I'm going to ask either Steve or Tom to do it with me right now.
Okay. Here we go.
The question is, and you can both do it. The question is, what are three good things that happened to you in your life? And since we're in the morning, I could just say for the last yesterday and today, if you do it at night, it should be what happened today that was good. And then you're supposed to also answer the question of why did those things happen? So either one of you, Steve or Tom.
So I'll share what I went on.
He's wearing the shirt that says leaders speak first. So he gets to go. Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm going to regret that whole thing. I went on a walk this morning with my wife, and we get out, we get fresh air. That was really good.
My wife doesn't work on Wednesdays, so she got to sleep in today. That was really good.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
So that's one. What do you do with that now, John?
Well, the thing I like to do is, first of all, just notice it, right? And that's what we're supposed to do. The problem with most of us when we wake up at night or if we can't get to sleep is that there are two kinds of thoughts that happen. One kind is the regret thought, where we didn't measure up or we made mistakes. And we ruminate on that. We chew on that, right? And then we begin to feel worse and worse because you can't fix it when you're lying in bed at night, right? And then the other kind of thought that happens is an anxiety thought, which is what's going on tomorrow? What am I going to not measure up to tomorrow? Can I handle what's coming up in the future? And so we have anxiety thoughts, we have depressive thoughts, and that's kind of where our brains naturally go. What Three Good Things does is it kind of takes us off of that. And just by lingering on, oh yeah, I had a really nice walk with my wife, or my wife slept in. And then, so that's on the surface. The next level is to say to both of you, well, why did those things happen? And that you should be asking that in your own mind, but why? Why did the walk outside with your wife happen, Steve?
It's kind of a part of our routine, and we don't like to miss it. So it was out of a sense of just that's what we do.
Right. And so what I would do if I were a counselor in this situation is to say, so Steve, what does that say about you and your values? What does it say about who you are in relationship with your wife, who you are in your life? And I can make some guesses about that, but what do you think? What does it say about you?
Oh, I love spending time with my wife and family. That is a value that I have tried to carry with me throughout my life. I haven't always done it perfectly, but I value those relationships. I try and strengthen them when I can.
Here's this gut punch stuff again. 1 in 5 men experience a mental illness each year. 1 in 5. That's 20%. You've got five good buddies out there. Which one? Is it you? I mean, that's a fair question. Welcome back here from Montana for Montana. It's Voices of Montana. Tom Schultz alongside. We are talking about men's mental health. One of the challenges is obviously understanding the dynamics behind it. And John Summers Flanagan is with us as a clinical psychologist. Does just a lot of work, John, as I noticed you mentioned couple counseling, but there's whatever the cool counseling is. I want to be a part of that one. Boys and men, johnsummersflanagan.com for more information. Steve Arviscow, a friend. And a friend of the program here, guest host at times as well. Leaders Speak First, and did a TED Talk in Billings, and you can find that online as well. John and Steve, thank you guys both for coming in here and addressing this. And I noted earlier, this can be a challenging topic, John. We got to go back to some things that you started, because when you said that, do you have trouble sleeping at night? Cody and Steve and myself in the studio and probably a lot of people out there raised their hands and said, yes, I'm all ears about this. So three good things, the what and the why. We got into the middle of that. Let's pick that up again, sir.
Absolutely. So you just said 1 in 5 have a mental health challenge or problem, and it's even higher when it comes to insomnia. Almost all of us are going to be awake, right? And so since we're going to be awake anyway, if you don't have a tool for dealing with being awake, three good things is a really cool tool. Now, Steve said one of his three good things is going on an outside walk with his wife this morning, okay? And so then I asked Steve, because you got the good thing and you want to linger on that and notice it, and then you want to say, well, why did that happen? And Steve said, well, you know, I value my family relationships, and that's really important to me. And I think that one of the issues with our brains is that they want to chew on things. And when you lay down and you've got nothing else to do, your brain will get especially active and it will naturally go toward anxiety or depression, and it will ruminate or chew on those things. Now, what three good things does is it gives Steve something else to chew on. And what I have found is that almost everyone, when they say something simple, like I went on a walk with my wife, they almost say, well, it's just something I do. Well, it also says something about Steve. It says something about his values. And then so chewing on the why these good things happened and going a little deeper into your character and your values, that is something you can give your brain to do instead of anxiety and depression thoughts. So it's a replacement thing to think about. So really quickly, here's how it works for me. I always thought this is a really hokey, stupid idea. I made fun of three good things. I made fun of three good things for years. But I have a tendency, and maybe this is something that some of the listeners have too, but I'll wake up at 4 a.m. and I will have these dark thoughts. And it's really, I mean, it goes as deep as I am a terrible person. And it goes as deep as I am making the world worse, right? I just get into this horrible place. And so I decided, well, I don't have trouble going to sleep, but I wake up at 4. I'm going to try three good things at 4 a.m. And it was not easy, but I can tell you personally, it was way better for me to explore three good things and try to do that at 4 a.m. than it was to feel like I was a victim to my own thoughts. So what it does is, and then it became a little bit of a game or kind of funny. So now when I wake up at 4, sometimes I do three good things, sometimes I don't, but I kind of just, I have developed self-awareness enough to say, oh, here I am again. And I know those negative thoughts may come. And if they do, I have a tool to try to leverage myself out of it. So I hope that makes sense to you all. It's a very simple tool, and I think it's very practical. And most of us are going to be awake tonight, and so you might as well try it.
I like that. And do three good things. Don't just think of one good thing and then say, well, I tried, and it didn't work for me. be disciplined about it. And that's one thing I want to have you just, like, unpack for us. John, some of the tools that we can use as men. And let's start first, though, with how do I know I really have a problem? Maybe I'm just having a bad day. And I don't want to use that as an excuse to hide my feelings or hide behind something. But I think for a lot of men, it's valid. Really, is this an issue? Or can I just go back to work and, have supper tonight and forget about it?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And again, there's no really clear line to say, oh, I have a serious problem versus now I have a regular life problem. But the more frequent, the more intense, and the longer it lasts really will. And so if you have, let's say you start to feel sad or bad and you have suicidal thoughts, right? Now, suicidal thoughts are not necessarily, and they're one of the interesting things about suicidal thoughts is that they're much more common than people than and we've found that out from adolescents who tell us that like 30 or 40% of them are thinking about suicide sometimes. Mm-hmm. So they're not that unusual, and they come about when people are experiencing some emotional pain or they're stuck in a very difficult and stressful and disturbing life situation. And so if you have those suicidal thoughts, that's to a level where, your body and your brain are telling you, if I'm thinking about stopping the pain through killing myself, that's something I should talk with someone about, okay? And now, having a fleeting thought about suicide or feeling sad or bad for a few hours or even a couple of days, especially if it's related to grief or loss or adjustment, all that is well within the normal range. But if you get out 2 weeks and or the depression, sadness, anxiety is really incapacitating, like Steve described in his TEDx talk, that then you're in a position where start talking about it, because keeping it inside has probably not helped, right?
Yeah. Frequency, intensity, and duration. I think those are three things. You guys keep that in mind. If they're happening a lot, if they're intense, or if they last a long time, you might think about and think about what, John? Do I need medicine? Do I need behavioral changes? Do I need some new activities?
I think my answer to that would be yes and. It all depends, right? Some people are much more physical in their lifestyle, and so they might find in increasing physical activity and movement to be really, really therapeutic. Other people hate exercise, okay? Some people are drawn to the more biological or medical explanations, and medications can be super helpful for them. And so that could be a good option. For other people, taking a chance and trying out counseling can be incredibly useful. And as I mentioned before, start by just trying to have a conversation with a friend or a family member or a pastor or someone you trust, and notice how that feels. The thing I want to emphasize about that is if you're not used to talking about your feelings or about problems in your life, you might feel strange or weird or like it's wrong for you to be doing that. So like you said, Tom, right after I said the three good things and that you said, well, stay with it. Right? You need to practice it. Same thing when it comes to talking about our problems. We need to kind of get comfortable with it. And because if it's different and new to you, then it might feel like I'm doing the wrong thing.
Can you unpack some of the common tools? And maybe, again, there are a lot of people trying to, and I'm okay with that, self-medicate themselves, not necessarily with the wrong kinds of things, but with information and data and try to alter behaviors and try to be aware of this. What tools are out there? I mean, are they different if you've got anxiety versus depression or moodiness?
Yes. The probably the most underrated and most effective tool is cardio or aerobic exercise. And the literature on that is just really strong. And so if you're not exercising, you're not moving, then that's something to add in that, you need to take a little time for it, but it's really a kind of a win-win. The next best thing is probably a thing that we call CBT or cognitive behavior therapy. And CBT really focuses on those automatic thoughts that come up into our brain that are often super judgmental of us or of the world, and that they might become depressive and they might become anxiety-based, and that CBT just teaches us some more effective ways of dealing with those thoughts that are automatic, they feel out of our control. And so CBT is a way to learn how to cope with those thoughts and then to engage in more healthy behaviors. And then medications can be useful. There are not a whole lot of great anti-anxiety medications, partly because, you know, historically that people have given out benzos or benzodiazepines, which include things like Xanax and Valium. And those tend to be pretty addictive and really not a good choice for long-term treatment of anxiety. They're great for pre-surgery anxiety, right? But not great as a daily tool. Some of the antidepressants will have anti-anxiety effects, and so that can be useful. And again, those are things, I am not a medical professional. You should talk with your medical professional about that and see what might be a good fit for you. One of the dangers of turning to medicine is that sometimes then you have some side effects or it's not quite adequate, and then you get advised to add a second medication. Once you get too many medications on board, then it gets confusing and difficult to know if the medications are being helpful or not. And then there are other kinds of newer sorts of therapy. And one of the things that is, I think, really important is to, if you have had some traumatic experiences, to get an evidence-based form of counseling for trauma.
Yeah.
And there are various approaches to that as well.
Yeah, I think that's something you don't mess around with, and take care of that, because that has an impact on your physical health as well. Some final thoughts here on men's mental health. John Summers Flanagan is with us. Steve Arviskow is in studio here. A reminder, we're talking about things that can cause anxiety. Steve would recognize this as the former director of Big Sky Economic Development. Tomorrow, we're going to be at the Investing in Montana Summit, put up by Jim Brown and the Office Commission of Insurance and Securities. Got a great lineup of guests there. Eduardo Garcia of Montana Mex. I mean, you'll hear his story, and I bet there was some mental challenges in that as well. Dean Folkford is going to be a part of that show tomorrow. So encouraging you guys to tune in live from Bozeman at 9 o'clock tomorrow. Steve, take us to some of your takeaways from that TED Talk.
Okay, really, I'm going to give you takeaways from my personal experience. And I was mentioning to John on the break that really, for me, I had to take an all of the above approach: counseling, medications, exercise, etc. But I had, let's just summarize and say I was in a very bad place. I'm married to a nurse. She's pretty blunt. She looked at me one morning as she was going off to work, and I was sitting there. She said, "You need to get help," and so I did. And I went and saw Mr. Kramer. Mr. Kramer was the county coroner. I wasn't going to him for pre-planning. He was also a PA. He was our family practice physician. I started with him, and he asked me a very difficult question: "Are you thinking of harming yourself?"
Yeah.
And I had to say yes. And so for me, that what started my healing journey was being honest with myself, leading with my yes. And then I had to get active in my own healing. So I got a mountain bike. Every morning at 5, I was on that, and I wanted to participate in my own healing in addition to the counseling and other things. And then lastly, there was a point in my journey when I realized I had to take my eyes off myself and start focusing on others, the people around me, my family, who was in certain ways experiencing this whole thing with me, difficult on them. As I started to heal, it was time for me to shift my focus. And I think leading with yes, being an active participant, and then at the right time, leaning in toward others, such an important part of my journey. Those were the lessons that I learned. I don't know how they apply in the broader context, but that's Steve's journey.
Steve, thanks for speaking first on this.
Yeah.
We appreciate that. John, we've only got 30 seconds, but you've authored and co-authored more than 100 professional publications. What do you got here for a little wrap-up?
Change is very hard. We get in ruts, okay? Our thoughts and our behaviors, it's hard because we wake up, we go to bed, and we wake up with the same brain, right? We need sometimes a turning point, like Steve talked about, where you just shift and you make a new effort to try to change some of the thoughts and the behaviors that are less healthy, okay? So, and there will be some failure and setbacks in those.
Great.
And hopefully, by turning to others, like Steve said, that can help sustain you.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.